Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hammer Down on the Market Scale Network. I'm your host, Mike Bush, here with Joost de Vries, who is the CEO of ZM Trucks. Joost, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Man, so your PR team is terrific. Let me start by saying that.
Cool.
Gotten lots of great interest, lots of, hey, you know, we're working on this, we're working on that cool thing. Just had a grand opening in your facility. Let's start with the very basics. What is ZM Trucks?
Long story. I'll try to make it short. ZM Trucks stands for Zo Motors.
Okay.
Zo is a Japanese company where we started. It stands for elephants in Japanese.
Okay.
And one of the first things we realized in the US is you can't sell elephants. So Zo Motors became ZM Trucks.
Yeah. Okay.
That's the background. But we're a Japanese company originally.
Got it. And what is the focus of the company today? What are you building?
We're building today globally class 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 electric trucks, fuel cell trucks, hydrogen combustible trucks. We have buses. We have ground service equipment for airports. And we have yard goats. So that's our yard goat. We start production of the yard goat here later this year. And then we are bringing hydrogen and battery electric buses also, but that's a longer term project.
Got it.
We still have to fight a little bit with the Federal Transit Authority before that can go in. But it's a good proof point that you're more than just a startup and building something.
What's sort of your secret sauce? What's the thing that should have a company that needs vehicles looking at ZM Trucks versus a Tesla, a Windrose, a Hyundai?
Look for size. Especially in the US, incentives here for the last decade have been really, really good. Lots of startup companies and lots of failures.
Right.
I think early adopters have been burned a lot, and it's scary to step into it. So look for the bigger players. Look for people who have vehicles on the road. We don't have any vehicles on the road in the US, but we're in other countries.
Got it.
So I think that's really my message. Be skeptical. Take a chance, but be skeptical.
Sure. So if I got it right, it's sort of the old statement, nobody ever was fired for hiring Intel.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. Was it HP? Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, the...
Very true. Very
nobody
true.
Was ever... Okay, I understand. Very cool. So now how long have you been in your role here? Like, you know,
I started with Zo Motors in Japan 4 years ago now. Okay. That's where we were born. We started with electrifying K cars. You know, these little dinky toys they have in Japan, 600cc that we converted. And that grew into class one and then class two and then class three. And then we spread out to Vietnam, Malaysia, Cambodia. And then we went to the Middle East. So we started in the Middle East, the North African countries.
Okay, I have to ask you. So the Middle East is sort of famous for being big on oil production. How well?
It's awesome.
How well were you received as you launched in the Middle East?
Fantastic.
Really?
There is so much power there. They know oil is going to run out. They have 50, 60 years left before they're dry. And they're transitioning today hard.
Right.
So even in a country like Iraq, where oil is 14 cents a gallon, and electricity is free, essentially, they want the electric trucks, especially in the urban areas. Long distance, not so much, but in the urban areas, they have pollution issues just as much as we do in LA.
Got it. So you talked a little bit about, you know, this the distance and short distance versus long distance. What's the perfect use case for, let's start with class 8 and then we'll work our way backwards. But what's the perfect use case for a class 8 ZM truck?
Drayage.
Okay.
Short distance. Point to point, going autonomous soon, but not long distance.
Okay. I'm sorry, did I hear that ZM Trucks is going to be doing autonomous drayage soon?
Yeah, we're going to get there soon.
And do we have a prediction on what soon it means?
We'll be in drayage next year.
Okay.
We'll probably have some use cases on autonomous within the next 24 months. This is the main line. It's now not working because we need to get our permits done.
Got it.
But this line is built for 3 trucks an hour in a single shift.
It's amazing.
So, and this line is flexible enough to build the ZM8, the drayage truck, and the ZM12, which is a class 7 that's coming out next year too. And it can all go on the same line. Fully automated. This whole line is testing. fully one guy sitting in there, ABS brakes, weight, axle alignment, wheel alignment, everything is automated.
So now what was your career path that brought you here? So the whole idea behind the show is like, look, people that are in supply chain either fell into it.
And right.
Direct quote, 90% of the time they fell into it or they've got their legacy.
All right.
Nobody wakes up and says, let me go work in trucking, but you seem to have taken a different path.
I was 12 and I wanted pocket money. And my mom said, go get a job. So we were living very close to a commercial truck dealer. And I was a big kid and I started changing clutches on trucks.
I was terrified you were going to say I was driving at 12. I was like, oh, man.
And I was able to do that within half the standard time. So I was making very good money as a 12-year-old.
Okay.
And I was born by diesel, really. 25 years with AB Volvo in 8 different countries, always trucks, buses. Then I went to a couple of EV startups like Tesla, DeLorean, Karma, and ultimately back into commercial vehicles.
Okay. So I know you said, if I've got it right, there's sort of 3 power sources for the ZM trucks. There's battery.
Pure battery electric.
Pure battery, fuel cell.
And hydrogen ice.
Hydrogen ice. Yeah. What's your favorite? I know I'm asking.
It depends on where I am. It is hydrogen today in the US makes no sense. The cost per kilo is way too high.
Right.
But hydrogen in Norway is $7-$8 a kilo. That makes perfect sense.
Right.
In China it's about 10. Japan is getting very hard now to get under 10. Canada is at 9. So in certain areas, fuel cells make a lot of sense, especially if you want to do long distance. US, California is $36 a kilo. There's no ROI for a customer.
Right.
So don't do it.
Yeah, no, agree. So I know this because we work in trucking, we had to make things as complicated as possible. We couldn't do gallons to kilos comparison,
Extremely.
Right? Like we needed no.
Hydrogen is kilos.
you're right. Like it makes me laugh, you know, but we're like, oh, let's see if we can throw in some metric system here. So for folks, you know, who are kind of checking out this show, generally speaking, is it fair to say that based on mileage, 1 gallon of diesel is pretty typically comparable to 1 kilo of hydrogen in terms of
how more or less. I mean, there's a lot of buts and ifs and asterisks, but more or less, yes.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. So if you're want to have parity, your hydrogen needs to be around $5-$6 a kilo.
Yep.
And that's where diesel is in most places now, $3 to $5 a gallon. The benefit, of course, is tailpipe emissions. The negative is fuel cells are still expensive. You still need batteries with fuel cells. People don't realize that, but you need a battery. But it is definitely a step towards getting it cheaper. I think on the larger power users like trains and locomotives and things like that, hydrogen is really, really good.
Right.
Large power generation plants, mobile power generation plants, hydrogen is a fantastic solution.
So when you talk about cost parity, and anybody in trucking will say, and anybody in shipping will say, cost parity is really hard to achieve when it comes to zero emission trucks, right? Some trucking companies are going to say, oh, I need to add an accessorial. I need to add a fee in order to use a zero emission truck. Some companies are going to pass along that $36 a kilo as opposed to $5 a kilo. Or $5 a gallon, because again, metric system. How do you message around that? What would you say to somebody thinking?
The rest of the world's found price parity. Why hasn't the US? In Asia right now, more than 20% of all goods transported are on zero emissions. And customers do not buy the most expensive solution.
Right.
If we can sell electric trucks in Cambodia, why can't I sell them in LA?
Right.
It is... There are differences, of course, but if you look at pure cap cost upfront, forget about the total cost of ownership discussion. Asia is on price parity now with diesel when it comes to battery electric. Not long distance, but interurban. So class 4, 5, 6.
Right.
And you'll see that coming here too, where just the gap is so big. The US is unfortunately about 20 years behind where the rest of the world is. And that's really... We haven't benefited on that huge curve that happens a long time ago in other areas. Yeah, we built our own charger for AC. What we're seeing is that the government spent billions in building out public infrastructure. And then when you go there as an operator and you have to pay 68 cents a kilowatt, there goes your profit.
Right.
So we're very much with our customers looking at behind the fence charging.
Okay.
especially our box trucks customers, they have enough dwell time to charge for 6 hours. Right. So we have 20 kilowatt of charging inbound on AC, and we built our own charger to support that. If you have to go to DC charging, like with the drayage truck, the problems become a lot bigger, yeah. And you need to be ready for that. Don't rely on public charging because you'll go bankrupt. It's just too expensive. Yes.
So there are companies that are kind of doing that middle ground thing. So whether it's Forum Mobility or EV Watt, kind of saying, hey, look, we'll do a truck as a service for you, where for one cost you do a truck.
Yeah, if it makes sense for you, then that might be a great solution. But if you're just a box truck owner that drives 100 miles a day, if you can't rely on AC charging, you're not going to have a return on investment.
Right.
And yeah. That's what... It's very frustrating for operators that, oh, I'm electric now, so the price should go down. But then when you go to a public charging station and you see what you pay, it's like more expensive than filling up your diesel.
Right.
I drove this truck, this box truck, from Fontana, California to Houston, Texas, 42 hours straight. I spent $1,200 in charging. I could have done that trip for $300 in diesel. Right. So where's the benefit? It has to make sense financially, otherwise there's no transition. So we have to be super careful when we advise customers what they can do and what they can't do. And if I can't make it with them because they don't have any charging capabilities and we can't install us for them, I'll tell them, stay with diesel.
Yeah.
It's not about selling green, it's about selling total cost.
Which truck would you like to highlight? Let's pick a truck, talk about what's the most interesting thing about it.
Box trucks, small box trucks, 16, 18, 20 foot, lift gate, side door, the bread and butter of the local plumber who's driving an F-350 today with the work body, the bread and butter for the local door and window company, the fish market, the local supermarkets, just the bread and butter truck, high volume, low distance, intra-urban, that's where we make most sense. So this is how we build. Naked frame, this is where it starts. We put in the batteries. This will go on the big line, of course. But what you see here is basically everything that is electronic is on the outboard. OBCM, power distribution module, battery management system, 24 volt batteries, and the heater and the cooler. So it's Lego. It's literally, you put a block in. You don't fix any of those blocks. If any of those blocks ever go bad, change them out. Don't worry about it. Don't try to repair things. It's too expensive. Replace. Batteries go in the middle. It takes you about 45 minutes to flip a pack. And again, don't fix. Replace, out. The trucks need to be up and running. Downtime is too expensive for a customer.
What's your thought on swappable? And the reason I'm asking is, as I'm looking at this chassis where you're saying, look, we can really easily replace pieces, it feels modular to me. Is that something you're kicking around?
No. And I'll tell you what, the battery pack is by far the most expensive component in a truck. When you buy an asset, you know how you treat your batteries. If you go to swappable batteries, unless I can lease the chassis separate from the battery, like they do in China on cars, it makes sense. But if I own the battery, I want to know the quality of my battery, because my residual value is based on the back end of my lease or my finance on the state of health of the battery. And we publish the state of health in real time to every customer that we have, because all the trucks are connected all the time.
Yes.
So the industry will learn that state of health is going to be the indicator for residual value rather than age or mileage.
So in drayage, the big challenges with using an electric truck are the weight of the battery. Yep, you got it.
And we have solved that. And we have solved that. Yeah, okay. We will launch early next year a drayage tractor at 22,000 pounds curb weight.
Got it.
With 513 kilowatt of battery, giving you 240 miles range. That's the first one in the market.
Got it.
So it's painful because we have to take weight out everywhere else.
it's the funniest thing for folks who aren't familiar with the space. So what happens is, like, and I'm very familiar with the Nikola trucks, right? So the Nikola battery truck weighs 11,000 pounds more than a diesel truck.
I know.
Which means you have to actually take 11,000, right? Or take 11,000 pounds out of the container.
And that, nobody wants to do that.
Bingo.
I have to hit that 60,000 pounds load capacity. And I'm still... It's an inside kitchen. I'm still 350 kilos or 600 or 700 pounds too heavy. but we're so close now, and we have a path to get there.
Yes.
And we will launch not before.
Hiring lighter drivers.
No, no, you can't do that. But we are. I'd say we're 6 months away from hitting 22,000 pounds, and we won't launch until we hit 22,000 pounds.
And that's at a range of
240 miles,
okay.
Fully loaded, 82,000 pounds gross combination. So next step after this is these guys are getting ready for the battery. There's a lot of wiring that goes in and all the other good stuff. See, the battery pack is now ready to go in. We do the back battery first. And then the front will go in.
Okay.
Everything is modular, so they're the same size. You just flip them over and it doesn't matter front or back. Then we put the cab on. We put the first fluids in. And it starts to look like a truck now.
It does.
Good morning. So now the truck is on its wheels, fluids, electrical connections, but it's still dead. So, and then the last station is where we plug in all the ECUs, and 6 minutes later, we have a truck that can drive.
So one of the biggest challenges I've seen with the zero emission trucks, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, insurance companies don't have a clue as to how to handle these vehicles, right? Like one, they're more expensive than their diesel or gas counterparts. But two, it's not like there's a ton of zero emission trucks out there. It's not like there is every other truck is a Tesla semi. There's not a whole lot of data about what happens if these trucks are in accidents.
Yeah.
Right? Like all you have to do is go to Google and find, Tesla semi on fire. That's the number one trending thing all the time. How are you solving the insurance side of things to make it so that a trucking company can say, yes, this is a worthwhile investment, as opposed to, hey, my insurance just quintupled, therefore, my prices are kind of going to have to change.
Right. In the commercial trucking industry, and I'm not on Class 8, I'm talking box trucks now, the majority of premiums is based on replacement value. And California is a great example. If you're a California agent from a California company, you have to write a policy based on replacement value. But if I take a Pennsylvania company that's licensed to write in California, I can go on upfront cap cost. So you can go post incentive. My insurance premiums are lower than diesel with an electric truck. So you need to find different ways how to approach the market. California is a horrible state when it comes to legislation in that sense.
It's funny. We're a horrible state for legislation on the insurance side, but at the same time, we're the only state pushing forward and saying, hey, you got to have zero emission trucks.
Texas is the best in the country.
Really?
From incentives. New York, number two. California is a distant third when it comes to incentives and things like that. What we have is in the back wall there, you can have an optional day bed. That's why we have curtains. Because in Mexico and in Iraq, for instance, when you want to get into the city, you have to go to 2-3 hour security base. The drivers go to sleep.
Makes sense.
Even in a little box truck. So it is those kind of things when people step in there, it's like, oh, damn. From the product perspective, we're not at cost parity with diesel yet. So we go to states where there are certain incentives. Post incentive, if I can't make at least 20% lower cost per mile versus diesel, we're doing something wrong. So there is a significant gap after incentives where we can actually prove to an owner we are cheaper to run. And that's where you win. Do we still need that help? Yes. Do we need the federal help? No. Do we need state help? Yes.
One of the questions I try to bring to every guest here on the show is, if you were talking to somebody who's just thinking about getting into trucking, just thinking about starting their career and saying, maybe supply chain's for me, what's the advice you'd give that person?
It's an awesome industry. Let me start with that. I mean, what is it? 8.6% of GDP in the US is logistics, one way or another. Yep. Nothing in your house, what you're holding, the cup of coffee that I'm drinking, comes to you magically. It's all logistics. It's an industry that is incredibly fast in innovation, changing constantly. 5 years ago, nobody heard of Temu or Hein, to give you some examples. Amazon was just building up. Now you have all these different logistics companies, and they're constantly innovating. The new de minimis rules that came in from the government now that is no longer there, that completely messed up the supply chain, which is a great opportunity for people who can shift fast.
Right.
And you're seeing that. You're seeing those moves in the market. It is such a dynamic industry. If you're willing to be super flexible, stay a little bit up to date on what the industry is doing, it's such an exciting industry.
Sure. Perfect. Cheers. Thank you for being on the show.
Cool.